Good morning. This is Brent Lee with today's Daily Pod. In 1985, Bob Dylan made a comment while performing at Live Aid, an historic benefit for victims of the Ethiopian famine. His suggestion that something be done for American farmers in danger of losing their livelihood drew plenty of criticism at the time. But Willie Nelson heard it and was inspired. He teamed with Neil Young and John Mellencamp to found Farm Aid later that same year. Their first concert raised over $9 million that September, and it's become an annual tradition. 9 days ago, Farm Aid was held in the Hoosier State for the third time in its 38-year history, this time in Noblesville. Performances included Nelson, his sons, Mellencamp, Young, and even a surprise three-song set from Bob Dylan, backed by the late Tom Petty's band, The Heartbreakers. But before the music started, the group's famous board of directors took the stage and were joined by several farmers operating right here in Indiana. Later, I caught up with several of those Hoosier farmers, and some of those interviews make up today's Daily Pod. First, we meet Jason Federer of Walcott, Indiana, a third-generation farmer growing a wide range of organic crops on 4,000 acres and working to transform the Midwestern corn and soybean belt into a more diverse cropping region. And Dan DeSutter of Hoosier Grass-Fed Beef of Attica, Indiana. He's a strong proponent of cattle grazing for soil health and climate resilience. Federer framed the reasons he farms the way he does in a spiritual context.
I look at this creation and I feel like I can do it the most honor by taking proper care of it. And, you know, and that includes being responsible. It includes watching out, you know, for the interests of my fellow man. And that's, in a nutshell, what really drew me to it.
Okay. And same question for you, Dan. And I know that you also brought in another component, for the profit component, too. It makes sense.
Well, part of sustainability is profitability. We can't exist if we can't make a living. But for me, you know, I learned early on that working with the soil is more profitable than trying to just keep throwing inputs at it. So for a long time, we've tried to do more with less and to focus on making the soil healthy again. As the next generation all express their interest to farm, I had to try to figure out how we're going to make this work for three sons to join in. And, you know, if we stayed conventional, it was going to mean probably doubling the size of the farm. And that means putting somebody else out of business, and that's not something I'm willing to be a part of. And so we look for ways that we become be more intensive, and so organic really made a lot of sense because it does take a lot more management, a lot more labor on a per acre basis, but the returns are higher. So now we can support three more families and stay in it. We've actually decreased our footprint. We've given up a farm to try to focus on doing a really great job on acres that we do have, and that was a big part of what drove it. And, you know, you can talk about climate, you can talk about food quality, you can talk about all these things, but it's all related.
Okay. And as far as your own personal consumption of food, how do you eat?
I eat organic. Yeah, I mean that's I was eating organic before we converted to farm. So it, you know, it's something that's important to me, and that's, you know, if it's good for me, why wouldn't it be good for someone else? Why would I want to produce something to a lower quality than I would accept for myself and my family?
Dan,
you know, we try to eat organic. We eat a lot of Hoosier grass-fed beef, obviously. You know, we want more raw foods. We don't want anything processed. We just want the raw materials and to cook them as minimally invasive as possible to keep the nutrients and everything intact. And we know that's what's better for human health. That anytime, the more steps it goes through, the more times you try to change it or mask it or whatever else is going on, the worse health outcome you're going to have. So, you know, straight from the field as much as possible is the best.
My conversation with Jason Federer of Walcott, Indiana, and Dan DeSutter of Hoosier Grass-Fed Beef of Attica, Indiana. Just two of those recently recognized at Farm Aid in Noblesville. I also spoke with DeAnthony Jamerson, the third of three generations stewarding the land, supporting black farmers and communities, and carrying forward a remarkable legacy in Princeton, Indiana. DeAnthony started our conversation by telling us how he came to make farming his vocation.
I've been around my grandpa's farm all my life. I started Legacy Taste of the Garden in 2016, and that's just kind of my from my aspirations to get into farming. But I will say, growing up, outside working on the farm, I thought that was like a chore. Like, I mean, I grew up working in the melon fields, like heat of summer. Me and my cousins, we complaining on getting out there, or like my mom having a garden. Like, she would send us out there to pull weeds for punishments. Or, like, if we get in trouble, they send us to the watermelon fields with my grandpa and his brother. So, like, I will say it wasn't until, like, I got a little older that and had the understanding of the importance of land ownership and farming and things like that that I took those interests up.
Was there a period of maybe young adulthood, or you're still young, but before now, recent years, where you had to go away and do something else to really appreciate what you were wanting to come back to?
Yeah, most definitely. So, like, when I graduated high school, I started out, went to school at Kentucky State, which is a land-grant, agricultural-based school. Did not go to school for ag then, okay? I went there for a couple years, came back, got my associate's degree from a community college. And once I graduated from there, that's when I started Legacy Taste of the Garden. Fast forward 4 years after that, I went back to school to get my bachelor's from Tennessee State in an ag business degree. So I definitely, like, had to go away and find some appreciation for what I had back home, too.
And what's the plan for the intermediate for the farm for you, and where do you hope to take things in your generation of stewardship?
For one, I would just like to, one, step into it and build it to be sustainable for the next generations. I can't necessarily say how it's going to look. I tell people all the time, like, the way my grandfather farmed was different than the way his grandfather farmed, and I think it's going to be the same way for me and the next generations as well. So really just trying to stay with the trends in ag and find ways to diversify and stay successful and sustainable.
And you say the next generation. Do you have any kids that are interested in it, or maybe nieces or nephews or anything like this that you're looking at specifically, or just whoever, whether they are related to you or not, just that next generation?
Really, whether they're related or not, I have two young ones, one and two right now, so they ain't quite at that age yet. I do have younger nieces, well, not nieces and nephews, but cousins that are kind of have interest. But I also work at a school here in Indiana, Indiana Ag and Tech Charter School. And in our region, we work with inner city kids and getting them that exposure and experience in the ag industry. So I'm definitely looking to touch all the next generation. Oh, well, the ones that I come across, if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course. And then so maybe close with this, maybe a little advice, what I'm drawing out of what you said for adults of today and parents of today. If you want your kids to be involved in ag later on, maybe don't make them pull weeds as a punishment.
Yeah, maybe you should put them out there, because, yeah. I mean, they gain that knowledge at the same time. So.
But maybe just something they do, not a bad thing.
Right. Well,
thanks for talking to us.
No, thank you. I appreciate it.
That's D'Anthony Jamerson of Princeton. We'll meet a couple of more Hoosier farmers who were honored at Farm Aid last month coming up as the Daily Pod continues.
Don't adjust your radio. The sound that you hear is your stomach. You're having trouble focusing. You can't recall your last meal. You're trapped in the hunger zone. The solution, Batesville To Go. Let To Go deliver a hot, fresh meal to your home or office whenever hunger strikes. To Go delivers the best food from local restaurants. Visit us online at togodelivers.com or call us at 812-727-8800. Batesville To Go. Big city convenience, small town taste.
Each year, Farm Aid honors farmers from the area in which the concert is held. Returning to the Hoosier State this year for the first time since 2001, the farmer heroes, as they call them, were from the state of Indiana. On today's Daily Pod, we're sharing some of the interviews I had with those producers backstage at the historic concert. We'll close today with my conversation with Joseph and Dave Fisher of Fisher Farms near Jasper, Indiana. This father and son team are passionate about cattle grazing, soil health, local food systems, and the next generation of farmers and ranchers. The father, Dave, started by telling us how his family got into this style of farming.
We transitioned over about 2002, and we started selling direct to customers and restaurants in 2004.
Okay.
And we really focus on the regenerative ag, on building our soils, and also building community by working with other farmers on how to produce those products in a regenerative way to where people will want them. And Indiana University is our biggest customer right now. They buy our meat for all their dorms. And so we're really happy to continue to grow. And we have a USDA program where we are looking for more farmers, especially Southeast Indiana would be a great area to bring more cattle farmers to get a premium for their product, as well as we have some incentives for cover crops, as well as for rotational grazing supplies, a lot of things to help them produce cattle and to get a premium for it.
Very cool. And so when did you start working in the business full-time?
Well, I like to say I rejoined the family business because as a kid, right, you know, you're always helping on the farm. But about 3 years ago, I came back to the family business. And really my role has become to take some of the sales and marketing and relationship efforts away from my dad, Dave, so he can focus on the farm side of things, and I can focus on kind of the market development side of things. And so that's how we loosely divide our responsibilities anyway.
Very good. And so what is your level of production right now? How many head of this and that are you running?
Yeah, so we butcher about 25 to 30 beef a week and about 80 to 100 hogs.
Okay.
So that's really been our main focus and how we'll continue to grow. But again, we don't want to, at the end of the day, grow our farm. We're looking for more farmers to work with us, raising some good Angus quality cattle. We can go into all the details with them. But we're looking for folks that, you know, have 40 cows, you know, and trying to make a living off of that. And we've got some ideas on how to get them more profit, more dollars in the pocket.
And so the higher labor is generally thought to, especially with crops, a higher input for organic farming. I've talked to some people about that today. How does that translate into livestock?
Yeah, it's similar. We do have higher inputs, but we've also taken some steps to reduce some of those inputs, such as we've switched some of our acres from corn to forage sorghum, just because forage sorghum, you need less fertilizer. You can grow other crops for a longer time period because it doesn't take up the land as long. So there's some things we've been able to do, and I think also just our feed program, we can feed cattle very efficiently. But at the end of the day, what we really need is customers,
right,
that are willing to pay for good, clean, healthy food.
And so one of the things that Neil Young said was to make that we all, it's to support the farmer. How best for the average person who maybe works at a factory, has never worked on a farm, has never lived on a farm, to make that choice to support the farmer?
Yeah, go to FisherFarmsIN.com. Yeah. That's how you can support us.
But yeah, to that point, it's really asking the questions to wherever you are purchasing meat. You know, where's this meat coming from? How is it raised? Really that consumer question, those consumer questions is what's driving upstream change. And unfortunately, that's kind of what got us into this. Is when people don't ask about those things and they really focus solely on cost, that's where, you know, the big guys start to take shortcuts, and you know the incentives aren't quite there. And so when you start asking where your meat comes from, that's when those restaurant owners, those chefs, those retail managers start sourcing, you know, locally responsibly raised meat.
And so we did talk about your level of production. What is that labor input? How many other folks working full-time for Fisher outside of the two of you?
Oh, boy.
We've got about five on the farm side of things and about five on the order fulfillment side of things.
Wow.
And I should also mention, you know, that doesn't include the processing side of things.
Sure.
We work with our partner, Sander Processing. They're doing the butchering of the animals, and then we're doing the order fulfillment from there. And then we work with a network of distributors to actually deliver the products. And it's our view is we don't want to necessarily vertically integrate the whole way, right? We want to work with other local family-owned businesses that do their part in that value chain and really making our communities thrive.
And so the processing is an element of things that is difficult. I mean, a hunter kills a deer, and, well, where does he take it? I mean, even at that level. But I can't imagine, are you seeing that as a need for people going into that business? There's a lot of regulation. It's not easy. You couldn't open up a butcher shop. You'd have to be planning for years ahead to do it.
Right. We've really worked with a great family in Sandin Processing and their family, Chris and Kent and Randy and Amy. Their whole family has helped us start off with their processing plant. They built a plant in 2003. We became a customer of theirs in 2004. And then in 2019, they came to us and said, you guys have grown so much. Why don't we look at jointly building a new plant? So we did that, came online, I think, in 21. in May of 21. And so that plant has really opened up the possibilities for us, but also for a lot of local farmers who were struggling trying to find a time to go into a processing plant because it just freed up a lot of capacity at their existing plant. So we look to continue to do that. We want to always be locally processed as well as locally grown. And so we're looking at, you know, down the road, we'll be doing expansions and so forth.
Is there any, referenced the USDA program earlier, is there anything going on to incentivize folks to go into that line of work?
Yeah, there's a lot of grants for meatpacking as well, and folks can Google and find those. So, yeah, and what's wonderful right now is the whole USDA has really pushed for more local food to make our system more sustainable, more durable when we get into pandemics and other issues and so forth, rather than just going all through one factory, plant. Just a couple of years ago, a factory had a big fire. Well, the price of beef just plummeted because no one could get them all processed. So one fire led to all the farmers across the United States getting paid less and actually below break even for their beef. So we really want to see that more spread out, more diversified, more resilient to hiccups in the system.
Joseph and Dave Fisher of Fisher Farms near Jasper, Indiana. Just a couple of the farmer heroes whose stories were featured at this year's Farm Aid concert. Thank you for joining us for this edition of The Daily Pod. I'm Brent Lee.